For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. And yes, I'm Tim Fuel and I'm back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. The FA Trophy begins this weekend with the first qualifying round. Step 4 clubs kick the competition off with dreams of a decent run to matches against higher level opposition and maybe even that glimpse of Wembley Way. This week, we head down to the West Country, Bristol in fact. First up, Richard Loughman, gaffer at Cribbs FC. Promotion last year to Step 4, and now this year they've already dumped one Step 3 side out of the FA Cup and travel to another next week. First up, though, a club from their own division in the FA Trophy. Also in the Bristol area, but two levels below, the story of the week. In the middle of a heat wave, they had the heartache of a match abandoned in the 83rd minute. They were leading 5-2. All because of a flooded pitch. Manager Liam Greening tells us more about Shirehampton FC's woes. Rounding it all up, John Couch, the executive editor at the Non-League paper, with the managerial changes, clubs facing demise, and the inside track on clubs preparing for the FA Cup next week. So sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. Right, so it is the FA Trophy beginning this weekend. Let's turn our attention to a side in the first round qualifying of the FA Trophy on Saturday. When we spoke with our next guest, I think it was a little under a year ago, it was to talk FA Vars, and they had eyes on promotion as they were top then of the Hellenic Premier Division, and unbeaten, I think it was in 13 league games back then. This time, it's a debut in the FA Trophy, I believe, and they've settled in well at Step 4 as well. Let's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Cribbs FC, Richard Loughman. Welcome back, Richard.
Thank you very much. Yeah, nice to be back.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you back. Step 4 football achieved. First win and points on the board. I think it was a whopping 573 crowd at home over the bank holiday weekend. Progression in the FA Cup, beating Step 3 Swindon Supermarine last weekend. I guess it's still fairly going fairly well.
Yeah, it is, to be honest with you. Yeah, I think obviously when we won the Hellenic Division, we got a record sort of points in the league over a 38 game season. We got 100 points, and you know, and it was almost the perfect season. And obviously only lost to one team the whole of the campaign. And you know, then we sort of settled into Step 4 with a draw and a defeat in the first couple. And then the last sort of week and a half just been as good as sort of the run into winning that league title. Obviously, you mentioned the 573 with the big derby against Bristol Manor Farm, which we won. And then our rivals from last year, Malvern, we went down to their place and comfortably put them to sort of bed, really. And after them beating us, doing the double over us last year. And then when we thought things couldn't get any better, we've managed to go and top it again by beating Swindon Supermarine in the FA Cup, and now we're in the FA Cup second qualifying round for the first time. And it's you've got to pinch yourself sometimes when you think how well it's going, but we're thoroughly enjoying it.
And let's just stick with the FA Cup second qualifying round. I'd imagine that as a Saints fan, a Southampton fan, a trip to Gosport Borough in that FA Cup second qualifying round, where there'll be plenty of shared Portsmouth fans, that's quite a mouth-watering tie for you as well.
It is. It works quite nicely because, as you mentioned, being a Southampton fan, we've got a big game at home to Leicester City on the Friday night, which my company's actually sponsoring. So it'll be a really, really good weekend. So yeah, then we can stay overnight in the nicest part of Hampshire and then head down to the bit that's not quite so nice with Gosport. But you know, it'll be a really tough game. They're a really good side. I know quite a few people at the club. And all joking aside, you know, we're not going there with anything sort of other than thinking that we've got to try and keep the score down, really. We know how much of a tough game it's going to be.
Yeah, it's a bit of a shot to nothing. But again, you've beaten a club in their division. That'll be in the back of their minds.
Yeah. Look, it's the FA Cup, isn't it? I mean, if there's one competition when sort of magic can happen, it is the FA Cup. And, you know, we've had them watched. So, you know, fortunately for us, they helped us out with a little bit of the sort of scouting of Swindon Supermarine with one of the videos of the game. So we got a bit of an idea how Gosport play through sort of scouting Swindon. But, you know, they've done a brilliant start. I mean, the two lads in charge there, Pat and Joe, have done a really good job in such a short space of time. And, you know, being the age that they're at, I mean, you know, that even more sort of impressive that they're unbeaten in six games, and you know, but we know what we're about. We know that on our day, we beat Berkhamsted in the FA Cup a couple of years ago. We've obviously beaten Swindon Supermarine this season, so we're fond of a giant killing, but this will probably be the biggest of the lot, to be honest with you. Swindon Supermarine at the bottom end of the Southern Premier League, albeit a very good side, and I don't think they'll go down. You know, Gosport at the right at the top end at the minute, and yeah, it's going to be a tough game, but one that we can go. There was zero pressure. No doubt, all of sort of our supporters will enjoy the day out. There'll be a big crowd, and yeah, hopefully it's a sign of perhaps the future things to come for the football club with those sort of games. But the early sort of infancy of being a Southern League side, it's a proper tough one.
Yeah, every day is a learning day, and so that's the big game next weekend. This weekend, FA Trophy. A decent home tie as well against Biddeford. Are they a side you know much about? They're in your division, had a similar start to you?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. I'll be honest with you, we're playing catch-up. Clearly, I think Biddeford are 10-plus years in the division. So, you know, Joycey, their manager, is going to know pretty much every player and every club. But it's similar for them. They don't know probably as much about us as other teams, and we don't know as much about them as well as the other teams in our league. But we've got, you know, an analysis team that have done quite a bit of work on sort of scouring footage of them. We haven't, unfortunately, been able to go and watch them. We normally get eyes on, you know, our chap Seb, who's absolutely brilliant, works for Bristol City as well as ourselves. And he normally goes out and does a report on every team we play. We haven't managed to do that for Biddeford, but again, it's fallen quite well. They played Horndean and the FA Cup last week, and we got good friends at Horndean from sort of my ties in the area, so we know a little bit going in. Is it a favourable tie? I don't know. I mean every game at Step 4 is a 50-50, it feels like. No one's unbeaten in the league, and everyone's sort of getting results off of each other, so it'd be a tough game.
Yeah, and FA Trophy beginning with this round, and I think it's £1,500 on offer for the winners, £400 for the losers. It's not the masses of money that's available in the FA Cup, but it's still, for a club of your size that's trying to build the right way, that's still a fairly healthy carrot to be dangled in front of everybody involved in the club.
It is, and you know, we're a bit of a unique football club, really, Tim, because you know, our reserve side are playing at Step 6, and there's not many teams that get promotion to Step 4, and their reserves follow closely behind them to Step 6. And, you know, so we've got the extra travel cost, not just for the first team, but the second as well. The second team obviously can't compete in the FA Vars or FA Cup, so they don't get the prize money. So we're sort of competing for both the teams, really. So, yeah, they're all important. I mean, the treasurer and the chairman are probably more keen on this result than some of the others that we've had. But, you know, I think for us, it's we've made quite a bit of money out of the FA Cup. We expect to get some gate receipts, obviously, from the Gosport game. They're getting nearly 1,000. So we've done all right in the FA competition. So this would be a little bit of a bonus. We will make a couple of changes for the game. And probably, you know, I think because of how well we've done in the FA Cup, it probably isn't the same sort of hype around this fixture as perhaps there would have been if we'd have exited a little bit earlier in the FA Cup. But come Saturday at 1:30, no doubt the boys will be frothing at the mouth for it, and we'll be desperate to get through. And another Step 4 team at home would await in either Evesham or Bashby, and you know, it gives us an opportunity to have a little run. Say all four teams in with the draw coming out, probably for all we could have a couple of wins here. So we're no different to the other three in that.
And with that reserve side that you've got, I mean, how closely do you work with the first team and reserves? Is there proper competition for places?
Well, I guess the gap's shorter now. I mean, when you go sort of county league level to Step 5, there is a bit of a jump. And don't get me wrong, there's a jump from Southern League to Step 6 and with the tool station. I mean, all of our lads were there watching a game they had last night. We made sure that the training night was on the same night, so we trained early and got out and watched them. There's two or three players, younger lads, that sort of train with our first team and play predominantly for the second. But they've been a successful side for a number of years and over a lot of divisions, and they're very close-knit and, you know, do things very differently to us. I mean, it's, again, the uniqueness of it. They're a total football side and get the ball down and play, and we're a bit of a Bristol sort of robust side that gave manage the situation. So we're very, very different. They're probably a little bit better on the eye. But, you know, it's we're all together as one, but probably don't have that sort of players jumping from one to the other as much as potentially some other clubs.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned before that Cribbs was originally a works team, I think, for Sun Life Insurance. So you're in the shadow of the M5 on the west side of Bristol. Lots of clubs around there, like, similarly to where my club, Hazen Yenny United, are lots of clubs around, lots of competing for not only players but also fans and things like that. But it does show that with the right people on and off the field and proper management, both football and business-wise, that really any club can make that rise up the pyramid.
Yeah, and again, I think everything, you need a little bit of luck along the way, don't you? Mm. And I think when I joined the football club 3.5 years ago, the Hellenic League and the Western League, obviously there was quite a few that jumped from the Western to the Hellenic, and the Bristol sides have really struggled. You know, there's not really been too many success stories over the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, Bitton obviously went away, and you know, and you look at Bristol Manor Farm and Yate probably not doing as well as they have done in previous years. I mean, Manor Farm are on their way back, and Yate have got a good manager now, but they've had a couple of years that's been less sort of probably less successful than what they used to. And the same with the Step 5 and Step 6 teams, really. So we've gone quietly about our business, and we've probably been the success story of Bristol. And you know, that's not me blowing our own trumpet with that. That's probably factual, the fact that we've had the promotion. We've got a brilliant facility. The pitch is absolutely superb. Our support base is gradually growing, and the interest in the football club is getting better and better. So hopefully, you know, we don't want to just be here for a season or two. We want to be a proper Southern League club and try and get to the upper reaches of this division, and one day try and have a club that would be able to be promoted to Step 3 and compete at it. So, you know, we've got a long way to go on that, but it's been really enjoyable so far.
Yeah, and you mentioned there, you've been there, 3 years now. It's been steady progress since you've been there, certainly. Great success as well previously at Arsenal Town in the Wessex League. And you were pretty much denied titles and promotion by the COVID situation that we had there. But you sound like you're still enjoying it.
Oh, I absolutely love it. Yeah, I mean, this is the third club that I've been at. I've done, you know, 4 years at Osborne and nearly 4 weeks, give or take a month or two at the back end of the season, 4 years at Osford. And come the end of this season, this will be my fourth year at Cribbs. And I live and breathe it. I'm more interested in it now than I probably have been. That's gone day by day, the 10, 12 years that I've been doing it. I've enjoyed it more and more every day. And, you know, and I think you get better the longer you do it, obviously. And when I look back to some of the things that I said and did in my early days at Allsford versus how I am now, it's very, very different. But yeah, you know, I think you have to love it when you're involved in the league football. The moment you stop enjoying it, the amount of time you have to put into it, I think that's probably the time you have to walk away.
And I think you show that you love it, because you still do love a post-match interview, don't you? I think there was even one I've seen this season where you got all the way back to the clubhouse from an away game and then did it. I mean, how important is it that you get those videos done, both for you and for the fans?
Well, I think you've got to do things properly. And I think that's, there's consistency. Again, I run my own company. I'd probably bleat on to the people that work for me. Consistency is the only way that you generate sort of interest and generate professionalism and all of that type of stuff. So, you know, it's something that we started doing in my second season, and we now make sure that come rain or shine, a big win, a big defeat, that we give our thoughts on it. You know, the views on the interviews tend to be more than some of the highlights that we put up. So I think people are interested in what you've got to say. And a lot of that's the next team you're about to play or the team you've currently played against, to see what you're going to say and if you're going to sort of praise them or give them sort of dog's abuse. But, you know, we try and do things properly as a football club. We've got, you know, a documentary series this season, a Welcome to the Crib, that a chap who's a volunteer is at all of our games and videos them and is doing a really good job with that. And I think, you know, if you keep putting marketing out on the football club, it hopefully generates a bit more support. And support is the only way you can grow your football club, isn't it? I mean, unless the attendances go up, we'll never be able to be a steady Southern League club.
Yeah, and I think that's it. That's the future success for non-league is based on every day being a learning day, whether that's you guys in the dugouts as management, whether it's the people running the football clubs. I still remember when I first got involved at Yedding, the only way to find out the results for everybody else in your league was to ring every clubhouse that evening. And you can imagine some of the people answering the phones at the other end in a clubhouse didn't always give you the factual information you required.
No, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, I mean, Twitter obviously now, or X, or whatever you want to call it, tends to be the way to go. But yeah, I remember having the Saturday night paper was our one. We'd wait for the pink in Southampton. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, we never had that privilege in the London area, but we do have the privilege of speaking to you, Richard Luffman, once again on the Non-League Football Show. I wish you... It's always great to get you on, always great to watch your insights and see how well you're doing. Best of luck in the trophy this weekend, and best of luck in the FA Cup as well next weekend. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
Top man, thank you very much for having me on.
So we're not going far for our next guest. Still in the southwest, indeed, still in the Bristol area. Now we always love to show all elements of the non-league game, and at the top and through the pyramid. And as you know, we all love a quirky story. So as I stand here, working up a sweat, just recording this show in an airtight studio in this heatwave, how quirky is a tale of a match abandoned on 83 minutes due to flooding? To tell us more, let's welcome to the Non-League Football Show manager at Shirehampton FC. Welcome to the Non-League Show, Liam Greening.
Oh yeah, all right.
Good to have you on, Liam. First up, how are you coping with this heat? Please tell me you're not a manager running your players on a Thursday evening in this heat.
No, we've had a little break. We haven't got any players to run at the moment. They're all injured.
it seems to be a familiar tale of that, all injured. Do you think this season we all seem to start a bit earlier, and everybody just... if they're not suspended because of the way the officials are waving their yellow cards around, everybody's carrying an early knock.
Well, yes. I mean, like sounding like making excuses or anything like that. We went away to Gillingham on the first game, won 4-0 with a couple missing, but we had a strong squad. And then that wasn't even enough. I think at one stage, in our WhatsApp group, when you're naming a squad, we can only name 3 players from it. It was,
wow.
It's been that bad. It really has. So after Friday, which obviously didn't count in the end, we had a 13-day break before Bishop Sutton next Wednesday, and we've just knocked it completely on the head. Clean break, and we'll come back in next Wednesday, and hopefully we'll have everyone, touch wood, back fit.
Fully charged. Well, you've got this one under your belt. As you say, it's a match that doesn't count, but I think it's going to be long in the memory. The match in question, last Friday evening, Shirehampton against Hengrove Athletic, Western League Division 1. You go 1-0 down, I think, and then you get level, and then 2-1 down. And then at one point, you're leading 5-2, so not a bad evening. You know, probably quite a warm evening as well. And then 7 minutes of the 90 to go, and the referee abandons the game. Can you explain what happens?
Yeah, well, obviously we're playing down at the creek, a Manor Farm. They've kindly leased us their ground for ground share while we're waiting for our lights and stand to be put up in Pole Lane. And I believe it was the weekend of the Seven Boar, was it, that goes through the River Avon. And there's obviously high tides. And then just, like you say, with 6-7 minutes to go, it's brought to the attention that probably a couple of minutes before that, that the water was coming through the bottom fence. And there's nothing at the time, I wasn't best pleased, but there's nothing you can do. Like Jamie, the Hengrove manager, he's a good friend of mine. He went for about 30 seconds when we were on the pitch and he was trying to get it abandoned. But we dealt with that after a pint, and everything was fine. We sort of just got in the change rooms and laughed about it, really, because it's a cliche, but it's the story of our season. It's been an absolute disaster. And then we go and put a performance in and get 5-2 up, and there's only one way the game was going, and that would have probably been a couple more to ourselves. And a natural freak of the river overcoming.
Well, it is one of those. I mean, Mourinho, all these managers that have got all the plaudits, they're never going to have this tale to tell. You know, when you're 40
no
years
one,
down
no.
down the line, this is the one that still make you famous. I understand it's like a complete freaking once in a lifetime opportunity, really, wasn't it? Summer high tide of the River Avon, which is, I think, is about 30 yards away, and basically the river rose above the bank, and then that all swept onto the pitch. I mean,
I think it's happened once before, but not in the not to abandon the game. But yeah, for it to happen, it's like you say, it's just. It just couldn't make it up. I think we got in the change room and shut the door, and you don't know what to do. We just all started laughing in disbelief, really, and just sort of said, enjoy your date 2 weeks sort of off, and we'll come back. There's no point getting upset. It's no one's fault. But it just about, like I say, it just summed the start of our season up, really, and it's.
So what happens next then? Is it now with the league to decide if the abandoned
score
stands?
No, it's being replayed. Oh. It's definitely being replayed. It's already booked in for October the 4th. But look, I knew that as it went on. I know there's people thinking if it got beyond 69 minutes or 70 minutes, whatever it gets. But that's an old rule, and maybe in lower league football. But I know at our level, if it's not to the 90, there's been a few... instance with floodlights and weather as well. There's cool games off late and results that have affected us over the years. And I know that them games get replayed. So there's, I was under no illusions. I said to the players when we got back in, like, this will be replayed now. Like, so yeah, there was nothing we could do.
If it's any consolation, though, I suppose it's a local game, isn't it? I mean, my club, Hazen Yedding United, we once went up to Gateshead. There was a bad injury very late on in the game. And that meant that we had to travel back up from West London up to Gateshead on a Tuesday evening later on for the rearranged game. So I guess it's a local game, isn't it, for you?
Well, that's right. It's a home game, so we ain't got to travel. Yeah. But the only good consolation that could have happened was we were 5-2 down.
Yeah.
And that would have been okay, but yeah, it wants to be. It's, you've got to laugh off. There's the referee couldn't do anything about it. The linesman down that end as the game was going on, he's trying to bring his attention to it, and I was man marking the linesman for 5 minutes trying to tell him to keep his flag down. But in the end, we got a corner in that corner and. He finally got the referee's attention. There's nothing I could have done, or no one else really. It was
so
like
for
to
once
say,
you
went, was on the wall.
You're 5-2 up. You're actually telling your players not to keep it in the corner. You're trying to keep it away from there.
Well, we were shooting that end, and it was one way traffic. So it was when he abandoned it, it was only in that we were trying to take it. It was only just covering the corner flag, and I was trying to encourage him to carry it on. Now, obviously, there's. You're 5-2 down, and we had people trying to sweep. Funny, really, but we had people trying to sweep the water. We got brushes before the referee's attention, trying to sweep it off. But you're just sort of brushing a river into a river. So
it goes everywhere, doesn't it? And they talk about game management in the Premier League, but this is a game management of a different type.
Well, that's it, and it just made the event probably funnier, really. you had two lads trying to brush off the brushes. You had they're obviously dug out at 5-2 down as a screw, it's unsafe and whatever else, and we'd all do it, and then you've got our dug out pleading with him to carry on. He was in a no-win situation, really. The rest, to be fair, he'd done well in the game. He's a good lad. We've had him a few times, and. Yeah. At first he wanted to play it, but then obviously he starts getting the voices come in, then that corner down in that corner where the ball was floating as he's trying to put it in the D. That was it, really. As soon as he stopped it, obviously there was no way Hengrove wanted to carry on, and referee was in a position where the pitch was covered in water, and I mean 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, it was up to the penalty spot.
Wow.
So
yeah.
It wasn't. I don't know if we'd have got the 6 minutes in with the stoppages and whatever when we were chatting. I was sort of trying to say, let's just play, but I don't know. It would have been tight. I don't know. What, I don't think we probably could have in the cold light of day. Like at the time, I'm pleading with him, and I'm adamant we could get it finished. But yeah, probably couldn't.
It probably would have brought a new meaning to bring the subs on, wouldn't it? The irony of it is not only there's you've got a flooded pitch abandonment in a heat wave, but also this isn't your ground, and you've been ground sharing, as you say, at Bristol Manor Farm for I think the past two seasons.
No,
and your pitch would have been fine.
It would have, and if we didn't play it on the Friday night and played it on a Saturday, which we would have kept to, it would have been fine. Like, there's all sorts of things, but like, it's just one of them things. I was praying we didn't score because knowing like the brains in some of our players, they would have gone and slid in it and brought it to the ref's attention. Yeah. So at the time, there was all sorts going through my mind because like the players could see it. But yeah, like when you look back on it, you just got to laugh and stuff. And it's just and like luck. I always say luck evens itself out over a season. So yeah, for the bad luck we've had, like hopefully we can keep a kit squad now for a long period of time. And obviously these little things that happen to us in games, hopefully let's say they're leaving themselves out and we can turn the corner because we're not a team that should be in the bottom four. That's easy for anyone to say, but it's a true fact. We obviously got to the playoff final last year. We've improved it very much this year. And we've just had the only way to describe it, a disaster.
And I think the win as well would have put you in the top half as well of the table.
Yeah,
sort of gives a whole different complexion for these 2 weeks off.
Well, exactly right. We've just finished a turret. Like I keep saying, it was a horrific spell. Like we've had no one fit. We've had to borrow. Like if it wasn't for certain people in the local area, I know, who have lent us players and given us players. And to be fair, some of them have been trying to get themselves fit, so they're not perfect for us. But if it enabled us to fill the side. And then we're finishing up and we're thinking, right, let's get a win under our belts before this break. And then we come back and it was all going perfectly well. And then it got stopped. So.
It's a story to tell. And as you say, you've been sharing at Bristol Manor Farm while you've been getting work done on your own Penpole Lane ground there to get that up to ground grounding for the tool station. I think it was December that you finally got planning granted for this 50-seater stand and the floodlights, which is great. But
yep.
I guess all that still needs money. And I mean, how are the plans and works coming on with that?
Well, it's like, it's a credit, really. I personally don't get too involved.
Yep.
It's something that I keep myself away into the football. And I, if they need me, they know where I am. But obviously, Pete, the chairman.
Pete McCall, I think... he's been a player, he's been a manager, he's a chairman, he seems to do everything.
Yeah, he's a player manager, he's been there a long time. And I was playing for the club when he came, he had a little spell away and he came back as chairman. Mm. And I sat in the AGM as a player that he came in and told people he was going to get the club into the Western League. But probably that was 2001, so you're looking at 20 years ago that was. But he's continually worked hard at it since and he's finally got what he wanted. And it's a credit to him. And now his son, Matty, who was playing, he's unfortunately had to retire as well. But even while he was playing, he's been the main man in terms of getting Penpole Lane ready now. I think the stand's been fitted yesterday out there. And the lights, the funding's all been agreed. And I think that's just a matter of time now. That could, well, before Christmas, it'll be ready to go out there. And there's a lot of people that probably doubted it would ever happen. Maybe I was one of them because it went on for so long. So I think they've shut a few people up by doing it. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing it because it wasn't easy. I know Boco in our area had a similar problem with floodlights and developing their ground over the years. And I think Shire have been, if not in a worse position, because what they've had to the hoops they've had to jump through to get this is not many people would have carried it on and not many people would have funded it probably out of their own pockets like these two have.
And I'd imagine finance, just like any other club, it's a constant thorn in the side. And I love the fact that, and I know many clubs do this, you know, sort of raffle for the main sponsorship, but I love the fact that Shirehampton. It was, I think, on your Facebook page, live by the chairman.
Yeah.
The club sponsor, wheel of, you know, sponsor raffle, the wheel app, basically, choosing the sponsor of the season. I'm big up to Phoenix Tax Services, but I guess all the other companies as well, who tipped their 50 quid in and everything like that. They're the sort of things
it's that... 50. Yeah, that's right. It's like, so I don't think you want to go away from your roots of being like too commercialised, because Shire will never be that. They are what they are. And I think doing it that way, just for 50 quid, you know, there's lots of people that like the club locally. They know what it's about. And like I say, that was something to help fund the first team's training, help fund tracksuits, and because that didn't take anything away from, obviously, the football club. It costs, well, near on probably £400 to play a home game this year, because obviously we're renting, we've got referees' fees. So we've got, obviously, the kit wash. There's a lot going on before you even kick a ball that costs a lot of money.
And there's a lot going on as well. We just spoke to Richard Loughman at Cribs earlier on, and he was saying about, you know, their reserve team are sort of following them up fast up the pyramid. And similarly, you've got your first team, but you've also got your reserves and your A team playing in the local Bristol leagues, and I think still playing at Penpole Lane at the moment. So all of that costs, doesn't it? Is it? And although you've got a great community spirit and, you know, various things on at your clubhouse, I'd imagine every day is an uphill battle before the floods come in.
You're exactly right. I think the main thing, what you have at Shire, is the spirit of the place. And the third team and reserve team, they make that, and the first team join in with that, because it's gone a little bit playing at Manor Farm, and there's obviously one thing I'm adamant on, is that there won't be a divide, and I loved what Shire was about before and I want to keep it that way. But obviously when we do move back, that makes that a little bit easier as well. But when we go on our no one gets paid at Shire. It's a club you play for. Before I came, they bought their own tracksuits and they paid subs to train, which I obviously wouldn't bring in different players, and I didn't want to do that. So that's why we do these raffles and stuff, to help fund the training and to give the players some, whether it be a tracksuit, free training or whatever. So we're not like a club that is chucking money left, right, and said, well, we can't, they haven't got it. And obviously all the funding is going towards that pitch at the moment. And when we go away on our tour, I have to say, like, there's probably 30 people, 10 from each team on it on average. And they're brilliant lads. They're brilliant. They're there. They support the club. They go up. They buy Pete's famous raffle tickets that no one ever wins. they support the club. They drink out there. It's like a social club on a Saturday night. It's brilliant. And that third team and reserve team, they make that. They really do. They're such great lads. And the reserve team last year, actually, say about Cribs, when I went, obviously the aim was to get us out of the county league. It's dead. And then we obviously, the aim now would be to get into the Premier Division. I don't believe, maybe it would be hard then for City Wise to go any further, but my ever aim was to get the reserves now into the county league and try to get up Penpole Lane to try and get Western League and County League football every week, because the place would be buzzing week in, week out. It's a club like no other. I think probably Avonmouth in the local area are on a par in terms of like having support and having local community around it. People that are there because they want to be there. It's such a shame because they come so close. And because of the fixture pile-up last year, they didn't manage to fulfil their last game against Oldland, the reserves, which cost them promotion because they were away on tour because the season got put back so long. And that would have put them into the Avon Prem this year, which again would have helped. The more we strengthened, the more they would have strengthened. And again, they would have had a big push to try and get in the county league this year. But obviously, their aim now is promotion as well. So they've delayed that by a year by just unfortunate events, really. And hopefully they can try and push on this year and try and get that promotion to give them something to pay for as well.
We often talk about, you know, Hollywood needing to look at non-league football clubs for their stories. You've probably told us five or six already. We should have the directors and producers banging on the door. You also had, as a first team, I think you had your first season in the Vars this year, which obviously in that run of form didn't go quite as planned. But also, when you're talking about a club that doesn't pay its players, you're competing in step six. You're competing in a competition that ends at Wembley. I mean, it shows the true depth of non-league football.
That was a hard one for me, the Vars. I have to be honest, I was desperate for it because it was the first time. It was a bit of history at the club, and we knew we were up against it because of the players that we were missing on the day. But then once I believe their manager left and they were not the team they were once last year. And on the day, they were there for the taking and we lost on penalties. Mm. That was a hard one for me, I'll be honest. Throughout it all, I said it will be what it would be. We're just trying to get as many points as we can up to this end group game because of the situation we're in and everything's a bonus what we pick up. But that Vaz one, I would have loved to have been in the next round, and we should have been in the next round. And again, it goes to penalties and you've just got a bit of bad luck. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like I said before, it's the story of our start, really.
It sounds like you're racking them all up. You're racking this luck up. Keep it in your top pocket. And I've already taken up too much of your time already. But Liam, I'm going to be following Shirehampton for sure throughout the season. Maybe we'll come back to you at the end of the season. You can tell us all the good things that have happened to Shirehampton, and hopefully, you know, opening of that new stand and the floodlights as well. But really appreciate your time. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Top man, thanks for the call.
So we are expecting a scorcher this weekend and some hot weather too. Of course, I'm referring to what Sandy Toksvig might refer to as the daring, dazzling, death-defyingly, devastatingly dangerous, delectable, delicatessenable, divinely decadent non-league paper. So it's time to head to non-league paper towers, and a welcome back to the non-league show. Executive editor, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Tim. How are you? It's quite some intro. I'm not sure I'll be able to live up to that, but we'll try anyway.
Well, you know, I just love a reference back to my old childhood days, and it's a sort of it's another bumper weekend, isn't it? I mean, brows are going to be mopped furiously, both inside and beyond non-league paper towers. We've got a full league programme and start the FA Trophy.
Yeah, it's great to have the weather back, isn't it? A little bit too late, but. Yeah, at least it's finally reared its head. It would have been lovely to have a bit of bank holiday, wouldn't it? That would have been great to swell the crowds of some of the non-league clubs. But hopefully this Saturday with plenty of games to go. The start of the FA Trophy, obviously being the main pool. Hopefully we can get some big crowds into non-league grounds this week.
Yeah, and he's exciting because of the changes in the pyramid as well. We've probably got quite a few debutants in the FA Trophy this year, and even as a step four side, there's still that potential, that dream of when we've had step three sides achieve it. Why not a step four side to make it all the way to the FA Trophy final?
That's right. I mean, if you find yourself on a decent little run, if you can maybe sort of get through two, three rounds, you can find yourself with a very attractive game against a potential big gun. As we've seen many times in the past, I think it was only a couple of years ago that Hornchurch did it, didn't they? Went all the way to the final and they were beaten. Beaten teams en route. I think the one that springs to mind, I think, was Colville, wasn't it? A couple of years ago when they beat Notts County. I mean, the FA Trophy always springs up some really big surprises. And as I say, if you can just get a little bit of momentum going in these early rounds, and once these big clubs start coming in, especially now with the likes of Torquay and the Oval and Scunthorpe United playing at step two. You know, all of a sudden, there's some real big games, potentially big games to be had there.
Yeah, and we spoke to Richard Luffman at Cribs earlier on in the show, and discussing, you know, they had FA Cup last week, FA Trophy this weekend, FA Cup the following weekend. If you're not necessarily had a great start in the league, this can almost kickstart your season, FA Trophy and FA Cup time.
Yes, right. I just come off the phone to Tim Seals and at Wimbledon Town, and we were talking about the start of the season, and obviously they got their big FA Cup game coming up against Torquay. They beat Tiverton Town away in the last round. Obviously, step three, so that was a great result for them. And they're going into the second week of September, and they've only played four league games. So yeah, they've got a bit of big catching up to do. They're not the only ones either. I think the majority of teams in their division have played four league games. So there's plenty of league football to be had. But in some respects, they become sort of victims of their own success, don't they? With cup runs. But I'm sure if they get to that second, maybe third round, and find themselves with a big clash against a big club, then it will be worth it.
Yeah, because of course we had the FA Cup second qualifying round draw this week with those step two sides coming in. Yeah, there are some mouth-watering ties, as you've already sort of suggested there. Yeah, none more so than my own club, Hayden Yeading United, hosting Scotty Davis's Slough Town, who've had a tough start to the season in National South. And, you know, I remember the last time when we were Yeading, we played Slough Town in the FA Cup. That was the FA Cup second round before that big draw for Newcastle United. As you say, if you have a little bit of luck with the way that the draw goes, you know, who you pull out of the hat, it's quite easy to progress in these competitions. And then, you know, everybody suddenly wants to join your club.
That's why all of a sudden, your club's been propelled into the limelight, and there's plenty of step four and five ties out there pitting themselves up against step two clubs. And you have to take a look at someone like Staining Town, for example. I mean, what a great draw they've got against Maidstone. ASC Stoneham from the Wessex League are going down to Yeovil Town. I mean, that's a tremendous tie for them. Three levels between them, but they've earned their right to do that. They've earned their place, really, not only in the club history books, but really like on the football map. I mean, AFC Stoneham, I'm guessing won't have had too many ties at the extent of this. But now all of a sudden they found themselves going down to down at Huish Park, and everyone knows who they are. So yeah, you know, all of a sudden it's propelled them really into places they'd never been before, and luck to us, what the FA Cup's all about, and it's all about enjoying that big day, and the fans in particular, you know, those fans of AFC Stoneham won't be used to places like Huish Park every week, but no doubt they'll enjoy it, and who knows, they may even nick a result and make themselves heroes.
Yeah, I look forward to those chants at Huish Park. You're just a small club in Eastleigh. Remembering some of the chants that Eastleigh fans used to get, you know, just a small club near Southampton. It just shows that, again, the depth of non-league football, doesn't it? That wherever there's a big non-league club, there's normally two or three others just hovering just below, that just waiting for their moment in the spotlight.
Yeah, and these clubs are sort of coming out of... Well, I'm really coming out of the woodwork now, aren't they? You know, there's some clubs in step five and six that we hadn't heard of sort of two or three years ago. We've got a piece in the non-league paper this week, thanks to our friend Tony Incenzo, who went down to see Route One Rovers, who are from Bradford, and that they've managed to find themselves into step six in the Northern Counties East. And what a great name, Route One Rovers, you know. And and Tony found out that they even got there through playing Route One football. They got there through playing very good football. And, you know, all of a sudden a new club has been born there, and they're loving every minute of it. It's so great to see.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about, yeah, we've always got plenty to talk about. There's so much going on in non-league football. When we last spoke, we mentioned about hearing the cogs of the managerial merry-go-round being oiled up. And I think it's fair to say now it's probably in full swing, isn't it? Of note this week, we've had Alan Armstrong departing at Darlington and Tom Killick at Paul Town after 20 years in the job there.
Yeah, strange one that one, wasn't it? I still not quite caught my head around that one. It come out of the blue, although there's been suggestions that maybe it wasn't as a surprise as people thought. It was to me, I must admit, it wasn't on my radar at all. Not sort of hailing from that way, but I mean, what a one club man Tommy Killick has been, you know, 20 years at one place, and why it come to an end, I'm not really sure. I suppose anyone will know, unless you're sort of in the confines of that club. Decent start. They won 3-0 at the weekend. They're just outside the playoff places, as they pretty much always are. Paul Town, always there or thereabouts, it seems. And they've decided to make a change and brought in Matt Tubbs from just down the road at Bashley. And, Matt, obviously we knew... new Matt with his playing pedigree. He's done a good job at Bashley as well. I think it's his first manager. Mm. I think that was his first managerial job. So he's stepping up. And obviously something happened to the club to make them want to make that change. But I don't think Tommy Killick will be sat about for long if he wants to get into football management. There are clubs out there who would love to have that. That experience of managing a step-free club at a very highest level.
Mm. And yeah, you say you Killick replaced by a non-league legend, I'd say, Matt Tubbs, who'd done so well in his first stint at management at Bashley, which is obviously nearby me to home. So yeah, there's been a buzz around. But it looks like he's pretty much taken all the backroom staff from there with him. The mop and the bucket too, I think, by all accounts. So, and whilst, Killick's loyal backroom staff and also players have also been departing at a fair rate of knots these last couple of days from Paul as well. It really is all change.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's said to happen, this, isn't it? And it's never something that's sat right with me. I think sort of maybe since the days of Graham Wessey and Farnborough and being sort of so close to that situation when Graham moved to Stevenage, and he literally took the whole Farmer team with him, and eight of the players leaving them with a transfer embargo on about 13 players, and it's never quite sat right with me. But unfortunately, it happens in non-league football. There's relationships with the manager, and obviously, especially with a manager and a number two. And his backroom staff, they all sort of come as a package these days. And if the manager's got a little bit of a bigger budget to play with at his new club, then the chances are he's going to go with the players that he knows. So yeah, I'm not naive enough to say it doesn't happen. I just hope that it doesn't it doesn't affect Bashley too much. It's a club I know very well as well. They've worked very hard to get where they are. I know they've been quick to hire Matt Tubbs' replacement this week, and wish him all the very best. And no doubt he's going to want to put his spin on it and bring some of his players along as well from wherever he can. So yeah, I just hope that it doesn't affect either club in a negative way.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that the club of Paul themselves have sort of come under a bit of scrutiny from the Paul fans in the fact that Tom Killick has been released after 20 years, and then obviously all the players departing as well. But the club have actually come out with quite a firm statement, just saying that that they live or die basically on their own decisions, and they appreciate all the work that Killick's put in, but sometimes things need to change, but that it's on their head be it, which I think is it's a brave thing, but it's probably a good thing that we don't often see in football.
Yes, it was quite an emotional statement, wasn't it? It was I think it was sort of written by someone who knew sort of just how much, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of outpouring of emotion that this was going to cause. I mean, he knew what a big decision this was, and he wrote the statement to comply with that. And I think it was always going to be, I think if you've been at a club for 20 years, I think it's always going to be a bit of a controversial decision, especially when it come completely out of the blue, you know, with the club having started the league so well. Say 3-0 win at the weekend, you don't expect them to part with your manager after 20 years. There wasn't anything wrong as such, but they still decided that it was time to fix something. So the statement I thought was quite emotional, but I think it had to be given the extent of that decision and the size of that decision. As I say, I just hope that the fans stick by the club, and you know, sometimes the board will make a decision. It won't be particularly popular, won't be particularly successful, but you know, sometimes the fans need to rally round and stick with the club, and hopefully they'll be rewarded for that in due course.
Yeah, in due course, of course, because Paul Towne travelled to Hazen Union United in the league this weekend, so we could do with due course being next week, I think. We'll let Matt settle in a little bit, but you know, we could do with the 3 points as much as they could. The other big managerial news this week, of course, that Neil Hardley back in football at York City. What a coup that is!
Yes, it certainly is. I mean, we had a chat with Neil a couple of weeks ago, and in the non-league paper, he came out and saying he wanted to get back into it. And obviously, with the situation at York, it was one of those real good fits. You just think, and it's great to see Neil Hardley back. He's an excellent manager at that level, as we've seen with Notts County and Solihull Moors. He really deals in big clubs, really, doesn't he?
He does
top
now,
of the
yeah.
table, and York City have obviously got a real big name there. Big shame to see Mikey Morton go, but unfortunately he was in a situation where, because of the new ownership and because of the money they spent in the summer, that he wasn't going to be afforded a great deal of time, unfortunately. It was the same down at Eastleigh as well. So York obviously went for someone with that National League experience, and who better than Neil Hardley? And I think that's as I said earlier, I think that's a really, really good fit. And they've had a bit of a dodgy start over there, York, but I think Neil's the man, really, to lift them out of that.
Well, you'll know probably better than me that he just exudes sort of, he's just calm, isn't he? It doesn't matter whenever you speak to Neil, and he's always pleasant. He's always, but he doesn't seem to get easily ruffled, and I think that's probably what York City need just right at this moment.
Yeah, cool, calm, and collected, isn't he? He's a proper pro. He's Neil Hardley. He goes about his business very, very professionally. A likeable guy, but I'm guessing not someone you want to get on the wrong side of in a dressing room after a poor first half. He just demands respect, doesn't he? And I think he's taking over a club, obviously with stacks of talent. But there's something not quite right there. There's something not quite clicking at the moment, and but maybe it's just an influx of new guys, and you know, maybe need a little bit of time to settle. But certainly Neil's the man. Neil's the man to do that. He's just that character. He's just got that. He's just got that ability to instill a belief and a spirit around the place, and to get that little momentum going, and then a true Neil Hardley run, I think, will certainly lift York City out of the mire, and who knows, maybe into a playoff place.
Yeah, because at the moment they're you know, it is a early embryonic tables and all that malarkey, but you know, seven games and still without a win, I guess that'll be his first target to try and, you know, they've got had three draws, so there's obviously only slight tweaks that probably need doing there, but you know, it'll be that getting that win under their belt. They've got home to Boreham Wood, aren't they, this weekend? Who again have had a similar game. Sort of start. Which, but I almost feel like Boreham Wood do that every year, don't they? And then sort of sneak up and sort of it's almost a bit like York City. There, they've got three draws out of those seven games they played, and I think that says about the way they play. They're not necessarily out of games, they're in them. It's just those very small margins that managers talk about, both for York City and Boreham Wood there.
Yeah, I think that's right throughout the National League. I think we're talking very, very small margins here. There's no weak link in them in the National League this year. They're literally the squads of players that every single National League club has got. It's probably as good as ever. And Bournemouth are a classic example of that. They haven't tweaked around too much, but the players they brought in are quality as well. And that piece together with a team that's reached the playoffs in the last 4 years, I think, or something like that. You know, so they've obviously got a shed load of talent up there. It's not quite clicking for them at the moment, but you always get the feeling with those big names that they will eventually. And Luke Garrard's another very similar sort of guy as well. He won't rest until he has got it right. And as I say, it's not quite going his way at the moment, but I'm sure they will. And I think that York Bournemouth, I think game at the weekend could be almost be like a turning point almost for both clubs. Yeah. I think it's as you say, it's about time that they need to start getting a little run together. And you know, they both showed glimpses, but not quite firing on all cylinders as yet. But this is probably a good game really for them both to test themselves and start kicking on.
Yeah, well, we are a couple of weeks away from that 10-game mark that we always talk about. So the tables are beginning to take shape, but not quite there. You've got the National League Barnet top on 16 points with Chesterfield similarly. Solihull Moors are the only unbeaten side, sitting third under Andy Wink's stewardship, which has been great. But then, talking about the bottom of the table, we've got Southend's ability on the field continues to show through. They're now on positive points despite that minus 10 point deduction.
Yeah, I think they'd be fifth, wouldn't they, in the table? but for that deduction, I think that just goes to show what a talented bunch they've got. They've been written off so many times, but they just keep coming back. And I think it stems on that very first game, that 4-0 game against Oldham, when all of a sudden people sort of sat up and took notice and thought, okay, you know, this although there's a big crisis at this club, they have still got some very, very good footballers and they're very well organised. Mm-hmm. And they will take points off teams if you're not at the races. And they've done that consistently. To say to be fifth on points accumulated just goes to show what a top team they are, and what a top job Kevin Mayer is doing. You know, with a bare minimum squad of what, 14, 15 players. I think I don't think he's managed to fill his subs bench up yet this season. And yet they're still in the situation they are. I just really hope, as I say, reiterate again, I just really hope they can get their house in order, and then it give them a platform really to kick on, because it's not too late. They can still kick on, and there's still plenty of time to challenge places. And given the squad they've got, you wouldn't bet them against doing that.
Yeah, I still fear for their long term future off the field. But yeah, and we've also learned of the demise of, or maybe not, of another big name of Essex football, where East Thurrock United in this past week. You know, too late to run it on last week's show, but I know you reported as per club statements in the paper last week. But it appears there's also a groundswell of support, particularly from the strong youth setup that the club have got. That they're not going to allow the club to die there.
Yeah, but unfortunately, that was something we reported on. We couldn't really get at, we didn't really have the time to
delve any deeper than we could. It was something that broke a little bit too late for us really to get our teeth into. But yeah, subsequently this week we've had a chat with a few people, including John Coventry, the legendary manager down there, and got them up into step two. Then I remember seeing many East Harrow games, and they were like the bore and wood of step two. They were a really, really tough team to play against, but they always had some really, really good players. Tom Wright was in there, Sam Higgins as well. I remember a team involving them too. They were always so tough, and it's just so sad. It's a lovely little club, and so I visited there a couple of times, and unfortunately they found themselves sort of down in step four, but that's nothing compared to the sad news that we've heard this week. And although there's youth teams playing there, I just hope that something can happen in the future that they can get back playing, and they'll probably have to go up through the pyramid again. But wouldn't it be nice to see back on sort of like step five plus and playing senior football again.
Yeah, indeed. Talking as sad news, we ought to make mention of the statements from Enfield FC. Although it's difficult again to grab hold of the full facts, so I wouldn't want to speculate. But the sudden and unexpected death of a director, Simon Needham, there appears to have had a multitude of unsettling impacts on the club and those involved. And of course, we send our best wishes to all at the club and also to all of Simon's family. But it again just highlights the fact that There's a whole set of circumstances that goes on behind closed doors at every football club up and down the land. And sometimes it's just very easy to be a fan to turn up at 3 o'clock on a Saturday and shout abuse at players, at linesmen, at referees and that sort of thing. And there's so much else going on. There's a whole soap opera at every one of these thousands upon thousands of non-league clubs up and down the land.
At the end of the day, a fan will turn up. We turn up at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon and leave at five, and then maybe half past seven on a Tuesday night and leave at ten. But there's an awful lot, as you know, Tim, more than anyone. There's an awful lot that goes on behind a football club that the fans don't see, and a lot of hard work as well. A lot of voluntary work in many cases as well. People who put their lives on hold to help run these football clubs, and we've seen down at Enfield this week. Obviously, tragic circumstances. There's been a lot of talk, and I think there was a club statement put out, which has since been altered. Rightly so, I think. It's a very messy situation, but ultimately Enfield FC now have to plan for a future without Simon, and hopefully, I mean, they have indicated that will be difficult, and as I say, I just hope that everyone there can rally round and manage to come up with a solution to keep the club going and to keep the club running smoothly, because after the season they had last year when in the Essex Senior League, they got Jamie Cureton as manager, one of the nicest men in football, and probably one of the most successful
most experienced as well.
Around.
I think he must have more miles in his legs than anybody else.
Yeah, and it just seemed a really, really happy football club, didn't it? When they won the title last year, but getting into step four, they made a solid start to the season, and everything just seemed so buoyant there, didn't it? And obviously this tragic news will have an impact, and let's just hope it's not one that was mirrored sort of down the road at East Thurrock. Let's hope there's a let's hope that there's still a football club that the fans can see at the end of the
at the end of the day.
And of course, it is also international break this weekend, so hopefully that'll have a positive impact on crowds across non-league, maybe a chance to swell numbers in the clubhouse to watch the England game on Saturday evening as well. But interestingly, international break also has a negative impact in many ways on non-league sides, with many players called up into international duty. So for their countries, you know, one of note, Jermaine Francis of Chelsea City, he's been grabbing plenty of plaudits and lots of impact on the games that he's been playing for Chelsea City. But he's got a great call-up to the Granada squad, along with Ashley Charles of Wealdstone in there. And there's plenty of clubs that will actually be losing some of their best players over the coming week.
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? I mean, right across the world, there are countries who are calling up National League players, or even low. Mm-hmm. We've heard a story about I think he's Barbadian. I think he's Barbadian international playing down at Step 7 Swanage. You know, we've heard stories about him, and you see that's incredible. You know, playing at Step 7 level and still playing for your country. I mean, there are quite a few. We were going to do a feature last year, actually, and we just got bogged down by so many, and there was and the thought really of forgetting someone or not including someone was the reason in the end that we decided that maybe there's a little bit more that we could choose, so we opted against it and just decided to feature a few of them individually anyway. But it's so good to see people playing for their countries and then sort of coming back and playing non-league football, and it just goes to show just how strong non-league football has got. And as I say, if those fans can come down this weekend, it's an ideal opportunity for them to do so. And if your season ticket friend or something from a football league club is free Saturday, then bring them along. Mm. And let's swell the numbers and let's show everyone just how strong non-league football is.
Indeed. Lots of league and FA trophy action for you guys to report on in the non-league paper. You've touched on a few stories that we can expect to read. Anything else you want to tee up for us for this weekend's non-league paper?
Look, obviously looking ahead to next week's FA Cup. We've got plenty there. I had a nice chat with Adem Ramadan, who plays for Ashford United in the Isthmian League. Unfortunately, he suffered a very nasty double leg on Bank Holiday Monday at the Kent Derby against Hive, and we had a nice chat. He's urging players really to get themselves sorted with insurances. He said because he was covered. But there are an awful lot of footballers out there who aren't, and he can't work now for 6 months. And there's a lot of footballers out there in the same sort of boat as him who won't be quite as lucky and have got young families or whatever. So you know, he's urging players to make sure that they get themselves covered. And he's a lovely guy, and I wish him all the best, and hopefully he's looking at a year out of football, but he'll still be very much sort of part of the furniture down at Ashford. We had a nice chat with Gary McCann as well. Mm-hmm. We got a young lad called Jack Patmore, who's 14 years old. He's an aspiring young sports journalist down at Billericay. Urged us, you know, if I get an interview with Gary McCann, will you print it? Yeah, of course we will. Great stuff. You know, we love to encourage the youngsters, and we'll support them as much as we can. So young 14-year-old Jack Patmore has got his interview with Gary McCann at Billericay, and as I say, they've had a great start in Isthmian League, and so we'll be speaking to him as well.
I'd like to say that Gary McCann inspired me as a young journalist, but I think we're the same age. But yeah, no, he's a perfect interviewee as well, I think. I'd imagine Gary McCann, but I look forward to reading that, and look forward to reading lots more by Jack over the coming years as well. We need to replace people like yourself and all the furrowed brows that have taken the non-league world to this stage, and it brings some young blood. Yeah, to bring some young blood through. But we look forward to reading all about it and everything else in the non-league paper this weekend. John Couch, thanks for all your help, and speak to you again very soon.
Thank you very much.
And that then is it for this week. It's a fairly bumper show for you. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Good luck to all those involved in the FA Trophy this weekend. Good luck also to Liam Greening, the manager at Shirehampton, who Hoff Air revealed that he's using his time off this week to follow England home and away. So hopefully his luck changes. A big thank you to all of you for listening to, and don't forget you can get involved on social media at Non League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL, and you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Castbox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe then. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.